Welcome to the Spinexus podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
And I'm Tyson Deskins.
This week, we're going to do a mailbag episode. We asked for people to send us some questions, and we got a bunch. We're not going to get through them all. We'll save some for a future episode. First off, jumping right in, James, via Twitter, asked, here's another question I randomly thought of. Seems like I've been seeing two kinds of swing types lately. Those that use the arms to shallow, and those that rotate in order to shallow. How do you know which way is better? Does it change depending on the golfer?
Okay, so this I'm going to try this one because the thought that you can shallow the club with your body rotating is just does not work.
Can we just cut to the end and say that rotation is a steepener?
Yeah,
rotation is a steepener.
Yes.
My favorite is I get people to swing up to the top of their backswing, have their arms in the air, and then rotate their body and let me know how shallow that club gets from there. The club doesn't move. Your body does not bring the club down. You could right side bend to create some amount of the arms lowering because you right side bend, which brings the arms down, but the arms are the shallower in the golf swing. So you can't just rotate to bring the club down. You would miss the golf ball. So there's no swing that shallows the club with rotation. There are aspects of the body that helps to lower the club, but it is not through rotation that is happening. It is changing like your body tilts.
Yes. And I had a lesson today that the guy was swinging 9 degrees to the right or so with a 7-iron. And so I had to teach him to stay in his left tilt at the top, rotate a little bit, and then kind of fire the arms down later so that he was able to get steeper, really, honestly.
Absolutely.
Because he was hitting 4 degrees up because his low point was behind the ball. This might blend into our next question. Rotation can be used as a steepener because it carries the hands out toward the target line or out toward the ball. And so I know there are some people out there that will teach you to rotate and move your hands out, but ultimately they're rotating their forearms to make the club go behind them, because we've all seen plenty of people that rotate and don't roll their forearms and the club just goes out steep with them. And that's the more common thing.
Absolutely. I think, again, people simply understand that we could end the episode, say, hey, thanks for listening. Rotation's a steepener. I think people understanding that by itself, I think, is big. Obviously, I don't think it's a bad thing for people to try to rotate more, but the sweet spot of the club has to be in the right spot first if you want that rotation to actually help you, right? And no one does it that way if they're doing it on their own.
Yeah, and that's truly why, you know, shallowing and the whole craze of shallowing is so big, because the more that you bring that club back behind you, the more you have to rotate in order to bring it back into the golf ball, i.e. steepening it from you shallowing it first. That's why better players shallow the club early and then have to rotate to turn and bring it back into the golf ball.
Well, let's think of like Mike Bender, right? Who's made a career teaching people to shallow the club with the arms, like get to the top, lower the club with the arms. Don't turn, just lower the club with the arms and then turn, right? And the Megza systems and stuff that he uses, like that's what it's teaching. And that's obviously very successful for a lot of golfers. I'm not going to sit and say that it's for everybody, but to just sit and think that you can just shallow it with rotation by itself, that's just not how it works.
Yeah, we don't rotate that direction. We rotate more around, not down.
Kurt, that's right. All right. So second question, James via Twitter. I think it's going to be Twitter forever. It's hard for me to call it X, but I'd love to hear about how to compress the ball while having a slightly in-to-out swing. I've recently fixed my swing path, so I can hit a consistent draw, but in doing that, I lost all my compression. For some reason, when trying to come from the inside, I can't take a divot at all. Eric, like how would you start to answer that question for James?
Swinging more in-to-out generally moves the low point back. I think we can all agree on that. That's why that's one of the reasons why most amateur players swing to the left and struggle with slices and pulls, because the first reason is their face is open, so their body instinctively tries to help the ball start somewhere to the left, and path is instinctual. The second reason is they can hit the ground after the ball a little bit more so if they swing to the left. It's tough, and you have to balance when you give that adjustment to a player and know, be like, okay, if you overdo this piece as you begin working on it, you might hit the ball heavy. That should be almost a good sign to you. And it depends on the student and how they interpret everything. But some students are like, okay, on the range, I'll hit it heavy for a little while and know that I'm probably overdoing it. And that's fine. Some players are like, oh, that's not good. I can't do that. You know, so you got to know your student a little bit, but there's other things that then move the low point forward, right? You're not going to teach someone who hits the ball with their weight 50-50 to swing out more, right? Generally speaking, you're not going to give that lesson to that person because they're going to hit 7 inches behind the ball. You know, there's a priority and an order of things. Compression, though, is ultimately about spin loft. And if we narrow the spin loft, we compress the ball more. I try to say the word deform the ball more because it doesn't actually get denser, but that's a nitpick, pedantic point that I've just about given up on. Shaffling, right? The right amount of shaffling, not too much. We don't want to compress the ball too much. We don't need a 7-iron that has 15 degrees of spin loft.
Golfed with a guy with like that today. Stinger 7-irons across the green.
Yep.
Right. Peak height of 45 feet or something.
Yeah, maybe lower. Like, ooh, that's interesting.
Yep.
It comes at the right time, you know, and you have to have some other pieces in place before you get like some of those draw pieces. One of those things is often fixing the face, because if you learn to square the face the right way and not like throw the trail hand at it to try to square the face, then your spin loft comes down and then you can compress the ball and then you can move your low point forward because you get some shaft lean.
Yeah. It's funny how you hit a draw is super important. I'll often show a student in my studio here with my quad and I'll be like, all right, I can make this swing. And I go, watch the swing. It's going to be ugly. And I go, I'm going to swing it out 7 degrees from super steep. And they watch it, and I'm like, oh, how'd that look? And they're like, that looked really bad. And I go, look at the launch monitor. What does the launch monitor say? Oh, you swung 8 degrees into out. I'm like, okay, perfect. Where's my angle attack, though? Oh, it's one up. I'm like, so I'm hanging back and hucking the club out. Yeah, that spin loft is just going to be skyrocketing up, and we're just scooping into that golf ball. That is not how you want to hit a draw.
This is one of the reasons why I really generally don't like the idea of students necessarily self-organizing and saying like, oh, I hit a slice, I'm going to go to the range and figure out how to hit a draw or figure out how to hit a hook. Oftentimes they find the wrong solution. It might work with a driver where the ball's teed up, but try to do that with a 7-iron and you're going to hit 8 inches behind the ball. A lot of students don't self-organize the right way or the best way because they might make a swing like you seem to have described there, Jason.
Yeah, or at least if you're going to do it, make sure to videotape yourself, right? And if it looks funky for you to hit that pattern, obviously something's not right. And make sure to videotape yourself from face on, because you're going to see a lot of things into like your shift pattern, where your center mass is, where your low point's going to be when you videotape yourself from face on.
It might feel weird and that could be okay, but if it looks weird, warning siren.
Well, and I think, you know, everybody... people who can't hit a draw, right? People who are hitting slices, they want nothing more than to hit a draw, right? And the draw to them is the sexy shot that, because they can't start it right and curve it left. And as you guys have just said, they'll find any way to do it. And oftentimes when they try to do that by themselves, they find a bad way to do it. I would just say to James, like you guys have already said, it's normal as you start the process to have your low point move backwards. Right. There are other pieces in play here to help you get the low point to move more forward while you're still swinging slightly from the inside. So keep at it. Don't stop trying.
All right. Looks like we've got Scott from emails. Should you also film your short game swings and putting?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Also.
same camera angles.
Same camera angles. Yeah.
I will sometimes let people move the putting one out to the ball. I don't need it through the wrist. I will sometimes let it be out there because then it's a little bit easier to see the path of the putter.
I do like camera on the ground at ball, like on the ground
for putting
from face on. Yeah. So you can see how's the ball coming off the putter face. Like, are you like pushing the ball into the ground and then it's hopping, or are you like actually like ascending, clipping the ball and it's bouncing off your face? That's a good thing to watch too.
Yeah, I think a supplemental, right? Not just...
correct, yeah.
If you're going to only record two, just do almost the standard two, but then some supplemental ones are good.
Yep. Sometimes when people send putting videos, I'll ask them to take one in line with your ball, but from the hole.
Oh, I like that.
So I can see their body lines from the other side, because sometimes you won't see that their thighs, right, or their forearms from the down the line view sometimes can look a certain way, but when you see it from the hole, you can really see that they're either the right leg's way out in front, where it's hard to maybe see that from the down the line view. I like that angle a lot too when it's putting.
This episode and a few more in the future was sponsored by a generous listener who wanted to thank us for putting out this podcast. We'd like to thank all listeners and ask that you share this podcast with your friends. Just tell them about it or forward them a link to an episode you liked. Thank you, anonymous golfer. Now back to the show. I have a question from Matt, who messaged me or posted on my site. What are the best drills to practice awareness for club face control?
I think it's a great one. And I think that's one that we could probably have an episode all by itself. I think, you know, ultimately, I always like sort of putting an alignment stick about 10 paces out in front of you, you know, sort of in line with the ball and the target. That gives you some feedback on, hey, where's it starting? Number one. So now I have sort of that intermediate stick. Can you start it right of that? Can you start it left? Can you knock it out of the ground? Right. I think that's an easy one for a lot of players.
I have a quick story about that. I was working with Josh Koch actually a long time ago at Reunion Resort. He put an alignment stick and he swings fast, and now he's a long drive guy, right? So he had an alignment stick in the ground, you know, 10 yards in front of him. He hit the alignment stick so solidly in the middle, the alignment stick went 100 yards downrange. He hit the ball dead center of the alignment stick. The alignment stick ripped out of the ground and helicoptered vertically downrange 100 yards.
That's crazy.
We measured it. We had to walk out and pick it up. Yeah. And we were the only ones out there, but it was nuts. But anyway, do you like just a single stick? A single stick is good for, I'm a drawer, so every ball has to start to the right. If you're high level, maybe can't cross the alignment stick.
Yep,
you know, I'm not necessarily a big fan of that, because a ball that crosses the alignment stick by 2 yards is 6 feet away from your target. So
right.
I'm not super big on that. But also, when you're starting out, put two alignment sticks and make a field
goal. Kind of like a field goal,
right? 100%. Ball has to start at least between it.
I love that. Absolutely.
You could also put one on your target line and one to the right of it and hit balls between it and make them all draw, or the other side and make them all fade. You can do that too. But that's one of the best ways, I think, to do,
yeah,
become aware of start lines.
Yeah, absolutely. I have golfers all the time do that drill. Just alignment stick 12 feet out in front of you. And there's three different levels. First one's face. I don't care where the ball goes. Can you just feel where the face is pointing at impact? Right, left, right, left, right, left. Then, okay, now next level, right, draw it. Left, cut it. And then the third level, just like you said, I like one fingered, obviously depending on the club, but it's like, okay, can if you get the ball to start right, draw back to the alignment stick within one finger or two fingers depending on your skill level, and it falls between there, perfect. That's a great shot. And the best part about that is then you can take that visual when you go golfing.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine you're on a par three. Well, just stick imaginary alignment stick out in front of you. Can you start right at that alignment stick, and can you have it fall into that alignment stick? And voila, now you can take some of your pressure practice and bring it to the course.
Yeah, we're recording this shortly after, a couple of days after Mike from Chasing Scratch was on, and you gave him the trees.
Correct.
Picture, and he talked about how one of the five things he would have wanted to learn most early on was club face control. And so this is a great thing to do with that. Indoors in my academy, we have traffic cones that people put up against the net, and that's basically their target line, or right of it or left of it. And some of them will create like little field goals with the traffic cones as well. That's a good way to do it too. With my juniors in the winter, often you could just have a buddy do this for you. As soon as you take it back, I will say left, right, or straight.
Yep.
And they have to have educated hands, right, to go back to a golf machine type term, and make the ball go left, right, or straight-ish. And we'll have a game where the other kids get to try to say left, and then left, and then
that's awesome.
Left, and then it's like, wait, what's the next one going to be? You know, yep. But you can see the people try. It's like rock, paper, scissors. They're trying to figure out, like, what's going to trick
what's the pattern?
What's the pattern? What's going to trick them? So that's a good way to do it, because it's just club face control. It's just you feeling like, where do I need to do? What do I need to do to make the club face point left, right, or pretty straight? So that's a good drill too.
That's right.
Requires you to have a friend.
I think the last thing I would say about it is, like, it takes reps, right? We've talked about this. Like, there's a lot of people studying rate of closure and all the stuff, you know, and what they're seeing is there's not a lot of correlation. So it takes a lot of reps and a lot of you holding the finish and feeling what the heck just happened there. So you have this feedback loop of, when I hit it to the right, this is what it felt like. When I hit it to the left, this is what it felt like. And it takes a lot of reps.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So another question here, Steven via email. I'm considering a 3-day golf school with a well-known instructor. What are the pros and cons of doing this?
Well, pro, of course, would be you're getting golf lessons.
Yeah, that's good.
Right?
Just always yes. Awesome. Yeah.
And you're getting to spend 3 days doing something you probably care and love a lot about.
Yeah.
You care about a lot.
So I've done a couple camps. I helped Andrew Rice do a couple of his like 2-day camps. And the amount that you can learn within that. Now, hopefully, and I'm hopefully in the camp that you're going to sign up for, that there's going to be some feedback during and then at the end of the camp. So it should be a couple of videos. All right, here's where you started. Here's what we're working on. Here's what you should be working on at the end of the camp. So if you don't know if that's happening, maybe ask before. Okay. And then make sure you get that because that's going to be valuable to you once you're done the camp.
The format of the camp or whatever you want to call it, the school is super important because you could spend 3 days and if they throw a ton of stuff at you because they think that that's what everyone wants. I'm going to be here for 3 days. I'm going to learn so, so much about like this and then this and then this and then that. That often doesn't work very well because you can't do that. You haven't made the first change. You can't make changes 2, 3, 4, and 5 in that time frame. So like, you know, some of the best schools, I think if you're going to do a 3-day golf school, they should almost include like a round early on so that they can see like how you play golf and what you do. Then an assessment. Maybe it includes some physical assessment. Maybe it includes some equipment assessment, like a whole game, a whole body type approach, a very wholesome, holistic approach. Then here's the one thing that you need to prioritize in your full swing. Here's the one thing you need to prioritize in your short game. Here's the one thing maybe in your putting. Here's some core strategy stuff. Practice that for the next day. And then maybe 9 holes at the end where you kind of apply a little bit of what you've done. But even then, it's been like a day. So like, it's really tough to apply that stuff immediately on the golf course. I'd be very cautious of camps that don't have a lot of feedback and who say, oh, we're going to cover so much. You can't do so much. You can only do a little bit. 3 days is a long time, but doesn't mean you can do a lot.
Yeah. And I think again, going back to, you know, the pros and cons of doing this, I think the pros, as you've already mentioned, it's like, number one, you're doing something you love. You're going to meet an awesome instructor. You're probably traveling to this. So you're going to a place you've probably never been to. Let's face it. It's always nice to go to new courses and new facilities and meet new people. You're going to make lifelong friends, you know, more than likely once you spend 3 days with them doing something you all like to do together. You know, I don't, you know, from a con perspective, obviously I'm sure it's not cheap. So there's money, there's travel, there's, you know, all that stuff. But once again, you're out there taking lessons. I don't think there's going to be a ton of cons. I think your expectations have to be right going into it. And if that's the case, then you're going to learn something.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if you only learn one or two things, that's awesome. Right. And that's where you should be like, all right, I got to this camp. Just like Tyson said, I got to travel. I got to play at a place I've never been to. I had an enjoyable time and I learned something. That's a win-win.
It's hard to put like a price tag on learning. Like, I don't know. I'm a learner. I love to learn. And so sometimes it might not be something that's life-changing, but if you learn one thing out of something, I wouldn't call it like a waste. Does that make sense?
Right. No. And plus you get to really dive deep into that one thing.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah. I like that too.
Really get it, like really understand it from every angle and have them kind of pushing you to really get that one thing down rather than like, oh, time's up. It's been 50 minutes. That's the end of our lesson. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, really try to, you know, I know you didn't quite fully get it, but good luck. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
That's right. So I just want to thank everybody for sending in. We got so many great questions. I'm sure we
have a lot more for some future.
That's
ones,
right. So we'll do this again. And if you are listening and you have questions, keep throwing them at us on X or on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you see it. Once again, thanks for listening. Share it with all your friends.
Yeah. And remember, obviously you guys are sending the questions on social medias, the Spin Access, and you can find us on the web at spinaccess.com. Take care.